wherever the breeding grounds are. So if I was literally waiting on somebody to pick me, I'd still be waiting.
I'm Darian Simone Harvin, and you are listening to Am I Allowed to Like Anything? The podcast, my podcast, that talks to people about their work, their lives, how they're maintaining their optimism in this world, and the things and culture they are actually enjoying versus all the things that we know we hate. So today, to be quite honest, I am speaking with someone who knows a lot about maintaining their optimism, quite frankly, because she had no choice. Simone Sanders joins me. So if you have ever worked in a newsroom, you were probably listening to CNN all the time. It sounds crazy. It sounds bad. It is crazy. It is bad. Especially during the 2016 presidential election. But one person who I will say that I did enjoy listening to and hearing from when they would hop on CNN is Simone Sanders. At the time, Simone Sanders was the national press secretary for Bernie Sanders. And yes, she was going on to talk about him and his platform. But really what I loved the most about her was hearing a young Black woman talk about politics, talk about values, talk about what she believes the American people also need, which is why she was within Bernie's camp, right? And so now, today, Simone is so, I mean, the glow up has just been so real for her. I don't even know how to put it. Today, she continues to be a political strategist. She continues to contribute to CNN and is the youngest person on cable news as a contributor. She also contributes to Crooked Media Podcast, and she is a fellow at Harvard's Institute of Politics at the Kennedy School. So I have a really frank conversation with Simone about the past 2 years of her life, or what she calls, and I agree with, her glow up. We talk about ageism and how she's been dealing with it in politics, in media. And we also talk about beauty because it needs to be done, in my opinion. Simone's hair, her makeup, her clothes are epic. And I am here to talk to her about it. It's what I do. If you love this episode, do not forget to rate and subscribe on iTunes. It really, really makes a difference. Know that you can always reach out to talk to me about Am I Allowed to Like Anything on Twitter at Darian Simone or on Instagram at Darian. And follow the podcast's Instagram at AIATLA. Okay, so here we are, finally.
Here we are, finally.
So, first of all, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm well. South by Southwest is treating me good.
Yeah. Were you expecting, a year ago from today, would you have expected to be here? And have you come to South by Southwest before?
So, I've never gone to the South by Southwest in Austin, but a couple months ago, last year, I did South by Southwest Europe, the first foray into Europe.
Wow.
I did the Me Convention.
Girl, you like next level already. Okay.
I did the Me Convention, and they were like, I was like, I'd love to actually come to Austin. And they were like, you've never been? I'm like, no. And I would love to be an invited guest. So,
yeah.
Guy Kawasaki, who's like a brand ambassador for Mercedes, one of the biggest sponsors, has
right.
been in South by Southwest. Used to be a brand. He's just done everything. Used to be with Apple.
Yeah.
He hit me up and he was like, "We should have a conversation at South by."
Yeah.
I said, "I'll do it." And we had a great conversation today, so I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
And I did not. No, a year ago. What was a year ago? A year ago today, when it was January. I guess was March 2017.
Yeah.
It was March 2017.
You see how I kind of just like looked off into nothing mm-hmm. because like that's how I feel. Like it's exhausting.
I don't remember what I was doing 3 days ago.
Me either.
So a year ago today.
Who knows what I'll be doing a week from today.
I A year ago today, I would not have expected that I would be right here. You know, actually, crazy fact.
Yeah.
A year ago, next Sunday, my father passed unexpectedly. Wow. Girl, he had a stroke at the gym.
I am so March sorry 7th, 2017. To hear that.
And no, thank you. Yeah. He had a stroke March 7th, and by March 18th, he had passed.
So March 2017.
Yeah.
So this was after the election.
After the election, but before my all the way glow up. Like,
let me write that quick note. Let's talk about that all the way glow up milestone. Okay, here's the first thing I want to mention before we really dive into it is something that you know, but I want to let you know that I recognize as I was just like reading stuff about you, listening to things that you've said. I used to work at BuzzFeed News, so that meant that CNN was always blaring in the mm-hmm. newsroom. So obviously you I hear you, I see you, but something that you do so well that I don't do is you never back down, right?
No, we're
and
gonna
I,
go.
Yeah, and I really mean that in a way. I think that people talk about that in terms that are very, too abstract, but literally, you don't back down from whether it's things you love, things you hate, whether it's an argument, whether it's someone on the other side of the aisle, you don't back down from when people offend you.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make you curl up. At least it doesn't look that way, right?
No.
And so I just want to let you know that I recognize about you.
Thank
and
you.
And not only is it impressive, but it also makes me go huh. I don't think I should be backing down either, right?
We shouldn't. I think that's part of being our authentic self. So I talk a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't back down. I don't curl up now. I don't, or at least I try not to. It's not that things don't offend me. Things don't bother me.
Right.
I have definitely left work, left the newsroom at CNN and got on the phone and cried because
mm-hmm.
A panel was kind of difficult, or I felt I was being treated differently by other panelists because I was so young. And I'm they wouldn't have
been. I have that. We're going to talk about that.
But I just feel that I'm at a point where, and I've arrived at this point a while ago, just before Bernie.
Right.
That I feel free, that I can be my authentic self, that I am not concerned about occupying various spaces.
Right.
And maybe previously maybe I thought I didn't deserve to be there. I absolutely know I deserve to be here.
Right.
Because I worked really, really hard to get here.
Like there's no question.
There's
right?
no question. So
there are no handouts.
No handouts.
This is intellectually who I am.
And it's okay, and I can show up. Just how I can show up bald, black, with some nails and a part. And a red lip, and it's absolutely okay, and I can still do my job.
I agree with you, and I think I very much felt that way even in the news, and there was a certain way I was supposed to look, and it's no. I'm going to come with my little flared little jeans, and just my simple little style, whatever. Talk to me about how you grew up and what life was like for you growing up in Nebraska.
Nebraska. Yes, Nebraska. Okay. Malcolm X is from Nebraska. Omaha. Malcolm X is from down the street, up the street from the chicken spot that I used to work at. His house is on Evans Street.
What's the name
of
the chicken spot?
Time Out Chicken.
Okay.
Time Out Foods, actually.
Okay.
They prefer Time Out Chicken. So growing up was good. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. My mother's from Omaha. My father was from Mississippi, but there's a military base in Omaha, and right outside Omaha, so that's how he got there.
Okay. So did you live on a base?
No, we lived. By the time they had me, we was living in a house.
Okay.
And so it was I'm a middle child, so I have a younger sister. We're 23 months apart. And I have a brother. We're 6 years apart, and I have another brother that's way older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But me and my sister and my second oldest brother, we all grew up together in the house.
Yeah.
So my mother was a stay-at-home mom. She owned her own business, and I think
doing
that was
what?
My mom has had a million and three different lives.
Cool.
She's a serial entrepreneur.
Cool.
For 16 years, she was a seamstress / wedding coordinator at the biggest church in Omaha,
mm-hmm.
and she did everybody's stuff. But that also allowed for her to be flexible and pick us up from school, or if I didn't like what they were serving at lunch that day, she would bring us
that's
lunch.
Amazing. That's
there were many times when my mama brought me Burger King because I was I don't eat the chicken fried steak. So that was, and my father was a retired chemical engineer from the Army Corps of Engineers. So for a while he worked at the Army Corps of Engineers, and then later on in his life he retired and he taught at Metropolitan Community College and worked in the lab. So growing up, my mom was super, and we were really involved in the community because she did everybody's stuff.
Okay.
She did everyone's alterations. So I was always at an event with her or out in the community doing something. We were always super engaged. So I took ballet, tap, and jazz, like all the little girls everywhere.
Yeah.
I danced at church. We were involved in church. So I had a very involved childhood, which I think lends to my very involved adulthood.
Yeah.
So, like, I've always had a schedule.
Right. Yeah, I think that's how I was, too. And I think it also lends to just a management of time that typically is filled with a lot of, like, also management of relationships. This is what I also think it eventually evolves into. So you wear this necklace, Dana Burns.
Oh, yes, I wore a necklace that says Dana Burns. Yeah. Today I have on my feminist necklace.
Your feminist necklace. And, you know, I always ask people, some people, they arrive at who they are, and they weren't the same as when they were children. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not. And so my question to you is, like, have you always been this way? Because I think of Dana Burns, and it was like this. Explain what that was when you were little and who that was.
So Dana Burns was my TV personality.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. And my mom said just one day I picked up like a spoon or something in the kitchen, and I was like, this is Dana Burns reporting live, because like clearly I needed a TV name because everybody else had a stage name.
Yeah.
Now I find it interesting that like I'm not playing Dana Burns. Like that's my actual life. That's literally what
I do. But I think the personality behind that, like, do you always feel like you kind of grew up being like this charismatic little girl?
Yeah. When I was born, my parents said that my dad looked at me and said, well, there's a set of rules for her and there's a set of rules for everybody else.
Right.
And I'm a middle child. So oftentimes like I would have to I would fight for attention in some way, shape, or form. So it caused me to just be a little bit more outspoken, maybe a little more self-sufficient. My sister and I are polar opposites. We look exactly alike. Like when we were younger, everyone thought we were twins. People still think we're twins now, actually. Which I'm like, you know, I'm bald and she has hair. What is going on?
Yeah.
But we're polar opposites. Like she is quieter, a little bit more like analytical. She'll sit back in the conversation. I've always been, hey, I'm here. What's up?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just who I am. I've always been this way.
Yeah.
And I think I'll continue to always be this way. I don't see it changing tomorrow.
Okay. I want to skip like probably a decade, lots of years to talking about how, just because I just like to really get to the things that I think people really want to hear about. And there's certain things that you've definitely talked about that people can read about. I want to talk about when you met Bernie.
Well, that's a long time.
How that was arranged per se, that you ended up in a meeting with him,
mm-hmm.
and he ended up, I feel like I read that he like pretty much hired you on the spot for a position as his campaign.
He did. Well, I asked him for the job.
Amazing.
So I think this is the most millennial story ever.
Great.
But I went on 27 interviews before I got the Bernie Sanders job.
Mm-hmm.
I moved it, like the timeline is quick. I moved to D.C. in November 2014. I was working for a consumer advocacy think tank in the global trade division. I worked for Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. I was their press person.
Okay.
Did that for like 5-6 months. In May 2015, I was like, I want to do something different. I came to D.C. to work in politics, and I started going on interviews. Literally, no one hired me. I went through 8 rounds of interviews at one of the Democratic committees, only for them to tell me I dressed so well, I spoke so nicely, I was very engaging, but they're going to hire someone from the inside. And I was like, yo, I've been here 8 times.
That's happened to me too.
Y'all are playing. It got to the point where I was questioning if politics is something I should be doing, if I was as good as a writer as I thought I was, like maybe I need to be looking into something else. And 3 days after my 27th interview, Jeff Weaver, Senator Sanders, then campaign manager, called my cell phone and said, I got your resume from so-and-so. And I was like, who is so-and-so? And he said, I like you and I just want to know if you want to come work for us. And I was like, who is this? And he was Jeff Weaver. So we chatted on the phone, mm-hmm. and then we set up a time for he and I to meet. We met. Had a good conversation. He was like, I want you to like meet the communications director. So 2 weeks go by, and this was in like June.
Okay.
So I was talking to the Sanders campaign in June. So June happens. I meet the communications director. He has like all these phones on the table. They're buzzing. He's like, we just need help. We're a small operation right now, and we need to grow. So I chat with him. I thought that went well, and then I don't hear anything. So now I've been on 29 interviews.
Right, and you're like, this is like, I wish there was an emoji that
literally,
was just like,
I need the temple rubbing
this
emoji.
Yeah.
Then 2 weeks later, that's when someone from Senator Sanders, again, they call me and they're like, Bernie really wants to meet with you today. And I was leading hill tours for the juvenile justice group that I'm a part of, that I was a part of at the time. And I remember saying, I'm only available until 4, and I'm not available again until after 7:30. Mind you, it was 2:30 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I done been on 29 interviews, so I gave I gave zero Fs at that moment.
Right.
And she was like, can you be flexible? I said no. Right. But I'd love to meet the senator. If it doesn't work, I'll meet him the next time.
Right.
They call back. They said, you know what? He can meet you right now. Can you come? I run over to his office. We get in the room. It's just he and I. I'm thinking he's going to invite other people in. He said, I like to talk to the people that could potentially work for me. I said, you're old school. He's like, I'm old school like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about everything from Nebraska to Democrats to young people to criminal justice reform. We get in a little argument to the point where I was like, oh, my God, he ain't about to hire me. Lord, today. We were talking about economic inequality, everything. But at the end of the conversation, I had given him like what I thought messaging should be.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I think I like you. I said, I think I like you, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I think I want you to work here. I was like, I think I want to work here, too.
Yeah.
And Bernie asked me something nobody else asked. He said, well, do you have an idea what you'd like to do? And I looked at him. I said, yes, I would like to be the national press secretary. I want to do cable television. I want to be your on the record spokesperson. I want to have a hand in the messaging strategy. And I want to do radio. And he just looked and he was like, have you ever done cable television before? And
whoa.
I said, no, sir.
That impersonation, no.
I spent a lot of time with Bernie Sanders. I said, no, sir, but I think I'd be very good at it.
Yeah.
And he's laughed, and he's like, somebody's going to call you. And I was like, okay, do I talk coins with you? Because economic inequality.
Right.
And he starts laughing, and he's like, they're going to call you. That was Thursday. Tuesday, they called. So I talked about a phone and a laptop, said Bernie liked me, campaign manager liked me. And I was like, what's my job title? They were like, national press secretary. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so, like, you have this thing that I have that I think that a lot of young people our age aren't, like, taught to have just yet. And it's in it, like, is perceived as entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, to me, it has more to do with, like, understanding your worth, understanding how to communicate
with people.
It's
called be
clear. Right.
My rule number one is what I call it.
Right. Be clear.
Rule number one, be clear. Rule number one is be clear.
Right. Tell people what you want. And in telling them all of what you want, if it's not humble, it doesn't mean that you're out of line. Like,
I mean, look, if somebody asks you where you want to go for dinner tonight, Darren, and you're talking about, I don't know, maybe that. No, girl, where do you want to go for dinner?
No,
I'm
exactly,
asking you.
Exactly.
So if he asked me, do you have an idea of what you'd like to do? Yeah.
He's literally asking.
He's asking me.
Don't
so
be,
I
this
should
is
have
not
an
the
answer.
Time to.
And so how many times do folks ask us what it is that we want, and we are not direct,
right?
Or we dial down what it is we say we want, or how many times are we asked to suggest something,
yeah,
and we don't directly put it on the table,
right?
Do we ask for just a little bit less because we think the real thing we want to ask for is too much,
right?
I don't do that.
I'm over it.
And I have been on 29 interviews. What I gotta lose telling a man I want to be the national press secretary? If he liked me, the least he could do is make me the press assistant,
right?
Or the associate,
right?
Even though I believe that I can be the national press secretary. So the other thing that I mean, and this goes especially for women of color, but young people particularly across the board. Sometimes, even if you're the best person in the room, they still might not pick you.
Right.
And we have been, a whole generation of young folks have been told, if you put your head down, you do the work, your work will speak for itself. You go to a good school, get good grades, you'll get a great job, and da da da. That is not true, because if I was waiting on the masses to pick me, nobody is gonna pick me.
Right.
I was a 25-year-old bald black girl from Omaha, Nebraska. That yes, had worked a number. I had worked 14 different campaigns
right.
at that point.
You had an impressive resume before that.
Yeah, I had a resume before that, but like I don't look like a press secretary. In just how I look, but also my resume doesn't necessarily look like a national press secretary for a presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gone through I went to school in Nebraska. I went to a very good school, but I didn't go to Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to Yale. I didn't go to Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to wherever people think that you should go.
Yeah.
Wherever the breeding grounds are. So if I was literally waiting on somebody to pick me, I'd still be waiting. But luckily, I picked my
clear.
Own damn self, and
right.
I was clear. So rule number one, be clear.
And be direct.
And be direct.
I'm here with you. And I think it can take some time to get to that place, or for me,
mm-hmm.
at least it did. But now I'm so glad that I'm here.
Yes. Isn't it freeing?
It's
like,
so
you can't
freeing.
You can't even remember why you used to live the other life you were living when you weren't clear or free.
I don't recall.
Come on, Jeff Sessions. I don't recall.
Okay.
Hi, it's me, Darian, interrupting my own podcast to tell you something new that I'm working on called Bleak. That's B-L-E-E-C-K. Now, for the past few years, I have been working at Yahoo News and at BuzzFeed News, and I sent push alerts about all sorts of things. Trump, shootings, terrorism, sometimes about Cardi B, sometimes about Black China, sometimes about Kanye West. Sometimes people just generally getting their wigs snatched. Like on any given day, it could be something completely different. But what I realized in doing so is that Black people aren't consistently getting the news that they want to know about right away sent to their phones on a consistent basis. And that's where Bleak comes in. Bleak sends alerts on Black entertainment news, specifically at the intersection of politics and pop culture, specifically. So we've sent push alerts on Kendrick Lamar winning a Pulitzer, Meek Mill being released from prison. Sometimes I've pushed longer pieces. Sometimes we push longer features about Black women in the cannabis industry. Just the kind of stuff I feel like I know people appreciate and deserve to know about right away and to have sent to their phones. You can try out and sign up for Bleak at bleak.co, that's bleek.co, and to see if this is something that slightly piques your interest and if it's something for you. And of course, you can always stop notifications at any time. So give it a try. You really have nothing to lose.
Tell me, what was the toughest thing about that position? And what was the thing that you loved the most?
The toughest thing about the position was that I often came into contact with people, whether they were inside the campaign or not inside the campaign, that literally believed I was only there because I was Black.
Ugh.
Like, there were people that had said this to me.
Who had said
They said this to me very freely at one point in time. Well, you know, you're only here because you're Black. And I was like, oh, that's why I'm only there? Okay. Drink a little more and tell me more about how you feel, people. So, I say that was the hardest thing because that then impacted my ability to do my job because people perceived I was only, I didn't have the resume to be where I was or the tools. And so I encountered a number of different roadblocks, again, from inside and outside of the campaign. And I don't think that this is like when I tell people like the types of roadblocks that I encountered, I don't think they're unique to the Sanders campaign. Like, that's
right.
Something that women in politics, really women of color, encounter every single day. But if I'm I was 25 years old.
There's also like another layer with the age.
With the age, there's a whole other layer because I'm 25.
Mm-hmm.
And who wants to listen to the 25-year-old? How is a 25-year-old going to tell me?
They have a hard time.
Exactly. And so that was one of the hardest things, is navigating that. Pardon me. But I'm glad that I did. And to be frank, I had mentors that told me, once they were like, look, if you can't handle a little ageism and racism now, a little sexism, you might need to get, this might not be the game for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying, like, I want to be the White House press secretary one day, then I want to go do something else. But one of my goals is I want to be the White House press secretary. They were like, if you want to be the White House press secretary, you can't handle a little ageism, sexism, a little racism now.
Right.
What makes you think you're going to handle it later? And I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
So I believe we need to combat all those things. We need to fight to eradicate racism, sexism, ageism. But we also, because they're not going away tomorrow, we have to figure out how to navigate it. So that was one of the toughest things, figuring out how to navigate it. One of the greatest things,
yeah,
or most enjoyable, was the ability to just like, to do what I've always said that I wanted to do. I used to always watch TV. I would watch cable news.
Yeah.
And I would think, dang, the people on here talking. Literally, I would be like, why are they saying this? Why is the message that? Like, that's why I got into campaigns in the first place. I didn't, I thought that the messaging often did not speak to people. They look like me, young people, women, people of color. And so the greatest thing about the campaign was that I was actively living out what I said I always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was the person that helped literally create the message.
Yeah.
All campaigns are, all this really is messaging that a few people get in a room and they say, this is what we're going to say. And then they take it out and they repeat it over and over and over in various ways.
Uh-huh.
I was now one of the people in the room.
Crafting that.
And that was so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
That was so important to me. And it was like, when I think about it, it's mind blowing that I didn't have to wait to reach some imaginary milestone to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I literally did that when I was 25, 26 years old.
Mm-hmm. and I look to do it again.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it like in my everyday life now. Like I'm one of the people in the room help crafting some of these messages, and it's just, it's amazing. It's the best thing I ever did, but it's also so humbling, and I just really feel so blessed. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah. And I also think about it in a way too, where I think that sometimes with certain conversations or with messaging, I think within music culture, behind a CD, like a campaign, a political campaign, whatever it is, I think that sometimes people who want to be on the inside in some way, are really eager to be in a room in some way, thinks it takes place around like a gold table, mm-hmm. when really it's about like people getting together to like share what they think they know, to like create something.
Oh, impactful. We only know what we think we know, and right. many of us don't know a lot,
right?
Me included. So,
same.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if this is something that people ask you, or if it's taboo. I genuinely don't know, so I don't want you to think I'm asking you because like I'm trying to be strategic. But why did you end up leaving the campaign?
Oh. Because I believe you got to know when to go.
Okay.
Again,
I feel like you're giving me messaging right now.
it is, but it's true.
Yeah.
You got to know when to go. And when I joined the campaign originally, I was 25 years old. By the time I left, I was 26. And I was 26, I wasn't 40 like everybody mm-hmm. else. I hadn't worked for presidentials like a lot of other people in the space that were out there. I hadn't like been in the political game for a really long time. I was 26.
Yes.
And I was very clear about that this was the continuation or the beginning, if you will, and not the end. And so because it was the beginning and not the end, I got to know when to get out.
I see.
And so, you know, the senator had been very clear that he believed every person in America should have the opportunity to cast their ballot for the candidate of their choice. So when the nominating contests were over, we clearly ain't had a delegate numbers. And that was that. Now, the senator had not yet conceded. But, like, that's a conversation Bernie had. Like, that's a place Bernie had to arrive to on his own. And I had to arrive to a place on my own where I was like, you know what? I love you all. This time was amazing. Like, if I could do it all over again, knowing exactly what I know now, I would absolutely sign up again for the political revolution. Mm-hmm. But I just believe it's my time. And people can't argue with you when you say it's your time.
Right.
So I called up Jeff Weaver. I told him, I think it's my time. And he was like, well, you know, we'll be sad to see you go. I was like, I'm going to send a note to the senator. You know, I will always be an ally and a friend, and y'all call on me anytime you need. But after this day, I won't work here anymore. Because I felt like I couldn't get another job. Like, I couldn't get my next thing unless I closed that chapter, if you will. So by closing that chapter, I had to physically not be on payroll no more and really not work there.
Yeah.
And
I think that takes a lot of guts, dude.
Girl, but that's a lesson for all young. That's a lesson for every single young. Like, you have to know when to go.
Yeah.
And campaigns are interesting because, like, you have a clear end date. Like, either you win or you lose.
Right.
And if you lose, you don't have a job. And if you win, sometimes, depending on who you are, you still don't have a job.
Right.
So.
And that became clear to you, like, at some point.
Ron Busby from the Black Chamber, I was at a talk with him one time, and he once told me, he was like, the day you go in, you need to be thinking about your exit strategy.
Mm.
And so I take that into like all of the jobs that I have. So the day that I went into the campaign, I absolutely thought about like what my potential exit strategy could be.
Okay.
But it didn't become clear that like that was a real thing until maybe 2 months before I did it.
Yeah.
2 months before I did it. So it was in June. My last day on the campaign was June 30th of 2016.
How much did you struggle with that decision? Because I think even about like my own decisions of leaving some place like BuzzFeed News that I really loved. But I knew that I had to start just to work on the things that I knew I wanted to eventually do, as opposed to holding myself back. Like,
The struggle wasn't on like if I should do it or not. Like, I was very clear that like this is what I needed to do.
Yeah.
The struggle was about things we think about that we probably shouldn't think. I didn't want anybody to be mad at me.
Sure.
I didn't want people to misinterpret what I was doing. I didn't want folks to say that I was being disloyal. I didn't, you know, because I think very, very highly of the senator. I went to go work for Bernie Sanders because I really believed in what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the campaign, I had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with him. I got to know his family. Mm-hmm. The people I worked with on the campaign became like family to me. So I did not want anybody to think anything less of me, but I also knew that I had to like pick myself. And so finally I was just like, look, Jeff Weaver, the campaign manager, and I have a really great relationship. We still do to this day. I'm always team Jeff Weaver. And I hit him up and I was like, okay, this is what I need to do. And he was like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I was 26.
Right.
I wasn't 38 with a family. I wasn't 40.
Yeah.
I was 26.
Yeah.
And I believe that, like, this is, I literally came to D.C. with the sole thing of saying I'm going to work in presidential politics.
Right.
So now I've gone and I've got my foot into the presidential politics door.
Right.
I want to stay in there. So I have to look up.
Right, and be strategic.
And I called up a couple of people close to me, mentors, and I was like, this is what I think I should do. You know, I called...
Who are some of your mentors?
Donna Brazile, Jamal Simmons, who is the forever millennial. Jamal is like 40 years old, and he looks like a fresh 31, barely 31. But Jamal had worked in presidential politics before. He had been a press secretary. He had left a campaign before and transitioned, and he had done a successful transition. So I hit up one of the women in my links chapter, and I was like, you know, I don't know Jamal Simmons personally, but I would love to talk to him because I just want a piece of advice.
Right.
And I called him up out of the blue, and he was very helpful. To this day, before I make a major move, I'm like, hey, bro, I'm thinking about doing this, and this is my plan. And he's like, good. Or he's like, well, maybe you should think about this. And I appreciate that.
Right.
And I think that's something we should all, like, feel emboldened to do. But, like, there was no one in my immediate circle or even in my, like, outer circle that had done what I was talking about doing.
Yeah.
Like, it's real easy for folks to give you advice. Because people told me not to take the damn campaign job. I got out of my meeting with Bernie Sanders, folks were like, this is going to ruin your career. Don't do it.
Yeah.
This is going to be terrible, blah, 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 blah. So when I was talking about leaving the campaign, again, some of the same people and even new people, everybody had different pieces of advice.
Yeah.
But I knew what I needed to do. I didn't have another job at the moment. I was like, I don't think I'm going to get one, though, if I continue to sit here. Because I feel like I could have just like a really deep and fruitful future. But I felt I did, to be honest, I felt like I could not have the future that could be in store for me if I stayed through with the campaign through the end of convention.
I see. I feel like that was like the ending of a conversation chapter. I understand now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what it is. Got to know when to go.
I want to talk about one more thing before we get into makeup, skincare, and fashion. So I really do think that there is a conversation to be had about ageism.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know like how you deal with it even today, being
I'm the youngest person on cable news.
Yeah, you are the youngest person on cable news. Were you not the youngest person working like in the Bernie campaign, aside from volunteers?
I was the youngest senior staffer.
Senior staffer. And how did you navigate that? Like, how did you navigate
good
that?
Good accomplices and allies. Ariana Jones is someone that I was a deputy campaign communications director on the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's still a good friend of mine today. I just had her out to my class at Harvard. I was like, girl, come speak to my Harvard class. Come do this thing with me. And she, like, helped me navigate it. She's a little bit older than I am, but also saw that, like, she was my ally. So
right.
If there's like something that I really wanted to get done, like maybe there's this interview I really wanted Bernie to do, but there were some other people on the team that didn't think that's something he should do. Like I would come to her and like, this is my plan. This is what I want to do. Can you help me make this work, make this happen? Like, so she was like my strategic partner in a lot of things that happened on the campaign. And I was helpful for that. I appreciated her for that. There was a time where I think I broke down in tears after one of the parades we were doing during Labor Day time because someone insinuated that like I was putting myself in close proximity to the senator so I could like walk with him and be in the photos. And I'm like, someone literally asked me to stand here. Like, so that I could be in the photos.
Right.
Like, I didn't self-select to do this. Someone literally was like, we're staging, you stand here.
Right.
And I broke down because I was just like, oh, nobody would be talking to me like this if I was 35 and my name was Bob and da da da. So I just had to get strategic. So when I come and show up, I have to show up with facts and data to back up what I say, not just because it's right or it sounds good.
Yeah, or it feels good.
Or it feels good. And like, I feel like this is what we should be doing. And the data says X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So I got really good at like bringing like supplemental data to back up what it is that I'm saying, because I already knew folks are going to be like, okay, well, are you sure? Or I don't think that's right. Or actually, Simone's just wrong.
Right. Like, you have to little hand them the receipts.
Yes. I got really good at collecting receipts and then popping those bitches on the table when need be.
Okay. So I want to talk about fashion and makeup because
I love fashion.
I just don't feel like people talk enough extensively with you about this. I don't think they do.
They don't.
So tell me, like, what is your everyday look products? Like, what kind of foundation are you using? What are some of your favorite eyeshadow palettes?
So fun fact, I don't necessarily have favorite eyeshadow palettes.
Okay.
I only have favorite lipstick. And
okay.
I love a good red lip.
Okay.
So I usually have, I love a bold lip, period. Like, I don't like nude, and I don't want anybody putting gloss on me. Mm-hmm. Please don't gloss me. I don't love want the gloss. I'm not a gloss kind of girl.
I'm a glossy girl.
I am a, give me a bold lip, paint me down. Mm-hmm. I have big lips, and I just want you to paint them. Mm-hmm. So I wear them from the Max matte collection.
Okay.
The little lip mattes. I wear the red, I wear the Dance With Me. I wear Carnivorous. All these are different versions of red. And every now and then I have like a nudie purplish thing I'll throw on because mm-hmm. like I gotta go somewhere where I'm just like, look, you know, it's too early for the red lip.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is in fact too early for the red lip. Not often, but every now and then it's too early for the red lip. And I wear waterproof MAC Pro Longwear.
Okay.
And I am an NC45 mixed with the NW45. Girl, because they don't make the colors. I wanna try out the Fenty Beauty. I just haven't had time to like,
I haven't had time
go
either.
Figure it out.
I'm an NC45, and then when I get a little darker, I mix like they have like an NC45. Something like another version of that. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I mix them.
Yes, I'm a mixer. But that's what I wear because like I like to wake up in the morning and put on one application.
Right.
And like I was wearing other stuff, but I would go throughout the day and I would look shiny. Nowadays, people want to rub on you, take photos. Like literally, girl, I walked out to get some coffee at the Starbucks yesterday, looking homely. And people are like, they waited nicely till I ordered my coffee and got it. And I was on the phone and there was like four people waiting and they're like, hey, can we take a picture? And I'm like, absolutely. I am mad at
that. I look good.
Yes, we can. Because some days they done caught me and I'm like, ooh, can you throw a filter on me?
Right.
I'm not going to tell you no on the photo, but I do need a filter.
Yeah. And do you have like any extensive skincare routine? I just ask because I'm really obsessed with skincare. Or are you kind of just like a simple?
I need to get more obsessed with skincare.
I can send you some things, some suggestions.
Yes, I need some suggestions because there are some days the makeup ladies at CNN had to really get on me because they was like, girl, if you don't stop coming in here with these tall coffees with four shots of espresso and haven't slept in your makeup because we know when you're sleeping in your makeup and your pores is clogged and your skin is dry, we're going to get on you. So I use this cream from MAC that is a hydrating cream, but I also like to mix up the Nivea and put the Nivea on my face before I go to sleep at night because my skin, because I wear the matte makeup, it just dries me out.
I see.
And then to wipe my makeup off, I love the Neutrogena oil-free and clear grapefruit because I just feel like my pores are, oh, every time I put it on my face, I just feel like, oh, and like it cleans me up. And so I was using some other ones for a little bit and my face was breaking out really bad on the like right side. And I'm like, why does my face look like this? Because these ain't the wipes I'm supposed to be using. So now I only use the Neutrogena. It comes in the pink package. It's the grapefruit version, y'all. Only get the grapefruit. You're going to put it on. Oh!
That's
my homeboy was at my house the other day, and he's like, you got a face wipe? And I was like, I got something for you.
Yeah.
I gave him the little makeup plus. He was like, yo, what is this? I need to get these. I was like, these is for the ladies. But you, too,
could
be oil-free and clear.
Right. Just from a day's grime. Like,
he was like, this is a... He done grabbed three out the package. I was like, bro, I'm going to get you a package.
We can get you a package.
Don't use up all my makeup wipes.
Don't do that.
Come on.
You know something else that I feel like you might... Have you ever done like oil cleansing too? I haven't done it before, but people
my mama
say
does
that they really like it.
My mother does and that. I feel like she mixes up her own concoction.
Yeah, and I feel like people who like wear like heavier makeup for whatever reason and for being on TV seem to really like it.
My mom does. I do it sometimes. I also do like a mask, like a moisturizing mask every now and then.
Yeah.
And then there are days that like if I don't have to have makeup on, like I won't wear it because like I need to give my skin
a
rest. But I do get my eyelashes on a regular basis and I get my eyebrows tinted so that even when I wake up with eyebrows and eyelashes every day, it's just something I need.
Yeah. Okay. So talk to me. Let's get into the plus one segment.
Okay.
This is a time on every single one of my episodes where you can talk about a person, place, thing, or experience that you're loving right now.
I guess the experience that I'm loving right now is, you know what? I've been on the beach thing lately. So now, once a month at least, I have to be in the beach. I've been doing this since like November.
I love this.
So once a month, I am at a beach. So I am either in Miami. So like right before my birthday, I was in Cancun. My birthday is December 10th. So
mine's
like,
December 7th.
Oh my God! We're Sag season. Come through Sag. Yes. I knew I liked you. See? Because the Sagittarius, we good people.
Yes.
So I'm on the beach once a month. So I was in Cancun, I was in Miami. Yeah. I was in Sarasota, Florida last month. I had to do a speech in Tampa and I just went an hour away to Sarasota to the Ritz. And I like to say at the Ritz, my sister worked at the Marriott, so I got a Ritz discount.
Amen.
Because Marriott owns the Ritz. I don't know if people know. So
I didn't know that.
Okay. So for all y'all with your Marriott points, you can take your Marriott points over to the Ritz and just get a way better experience.
Yeah.
So I'm a loyal Ritz-Carlton customer. Because they do beaches very well.
Yeah.
And so my next beach is actually next weekend. My one of my best friends, her birthday is on Friday. She's having a party in D.C. on Saturday. I was like, girl, you the only thing standing between me and my weekend beach.
Yeah.
And by Sunday morning, I'll be on my way to Miami.
Okay.
So
I feel like people really overlook Miami as like a great beach spot that you can get to pretty cheaply.
Girl, like the Miami beach is everything. And if you stay, if you stay at the Ritz-Carlton Key Biscayne, Miami, feel like you on the beach in Cancun.
Right.
I was like, this, I feel like
it's just
Cancun.
About the experience you have there, like high, low, you can do it.
And they give me the beach chairs. I only, to be frank, and people are like, oh, she done got all highbrow. I want to be clear. I've been bougie.
Okay? I've been bougie too.
I've been bougie.
This is sad.
I've been bougie.
You don't have to tell me.
But I also believe in full service. And so, yes, I could just go to Miami Beach, but I got to bring a towel. I gotta bring my own food. Sometimes the snack service ain't good. I could barely get a chair. It's hot. Like, you know what?
Keep it.
If I go to the Ritz-Carlton where there's a beach, they just take me out there. There's chairs out there. There's towels. There's stuff. They'll feed you. They got service. It keeps coming back and forth. I could be in a cabana if I want to be in a cabana.
Yeah. Listen, this is
I know ain't no crazy people going to run up on the beach. Like, it's good. That's what I did. And then I can just go right up to my room, take a shower, and then go have dinner.
Yeah.
So I'm on my beach thing. So if y'all see me in the airport at the beach, come say hey, but I'm relaxing. Like, I'm just out there. And I have a thing where I just want to walk through the hotel just in the swimsuit. So I would just walk out my room and just walk downstairs in my whole one-piece thong swimsuit, though. So I was out with my... some of my friends time, and I was like, do I feel like... I don't want to put a towel on or what's her name? I just want to walk out.
Yeah.
And my homeboy was like, I appreciate how free you are. Just go ahead and do it. I was like, I'm going to just do it. Y'all ready? Let's go.
Yeah.
So I'm here for a beach. So next week, back to Miami. And next month, hopefully I'll make it down to Puerto Rico.
See, this is how I know that we are both on the same wave in some respect. Because literally I've been saying to people this past year, like, I just need to be at beaches. I've been just gravitating towards beaches. Not to say that I don't like other
cities.
But I just need to be at the beach. There's also this thing about being in... near the water, where I have this thing where it's like I love to be around things that are bigger than myself.
Oh, well then the ocean is the thing.
Yeah. And so I just went to Tulum. I really think that you would like Tulum.
Yes. I was supposed to go last month instead of Sarasota. I was supposed to do Tulum, but I'm gonna try and do it.
Yeah,
if not in April, like May or something.
Yeah.
And people are literally like, how do you find time for the beach? I told you earlier, my father passed last year, and I realized, so when he passed, what I realized was, you know, life literally is short. Like, my dad did two-a-days he had a stroke at the gym.
Wow.
So if you have a stroke at the gym, like, anything can happen to you anywhere. So I'm not gonna, like, just overwork myself to where I can't enjoy the fruits of my labor.
Yeah.
So, like, that kicked off my, like, travel thing. So, like, I was, like, in Cuba a couple weeks after, like, last March, and I've been just going strong since then. So I believe in a beach and self-care, and I believe in good brown golden skin.
Me too.
I'm trying to be an NW40, okay? So that requires me a beach. I be out there with tanning oil. I went into the Ritz-Carlton thing the last time I was in Sarasota, and I was like, do y'all have tanning oil? And they pointed me to the shelf where all the white, because to be clear,
right,
it'd be white people at the Ritz-Carlton.
Right.
When I'm there, it's literally me and like three other people, and we are the most melanin that are at the Ritz-Carlton. And I'm like, okay, well, me and my black tail's going right down here, sit on the beach, be in the restaurant, and just enjoy, and be all up in the spa and enjoy the fruits of the Ritz-Carlton. And I was like, can I have the tanning oil? And they had stuff that would make you tan. I was like, no, ma'am. Clearly, I'm black. I'm looking for the stuff that I can put on my skin and I bake.
Right.
And they were like, I don't think we carry that. So I also have stocked up.
Have a line coming out?
I need one. Yo, if there are any tanning oil companies out there, holla, because I need it. So I stock up on the tanning oil. And I just believe it's something I got to do. So I try to get at least a good 2 days in at the beach because I want to keep this like glowy summer look.
Agree. I hate getting... Those New York winters will do it to you.
Girl, it's a travesty.
Yes.
And this administration is a travesty, which is why I got to be on the beach.
Then there's that too. So that's why I was on Tulum last month.
There you go.
I love Tulum. I thought it was still very boutique-y. Mm-hmm. The food was excellent. When you're ready to go out there and anyone else who's ready to go out there, have had a great shuttle service
that'll
take you just an hour and a half from Cancun, and it's totally worth it.
Oh, well, holla. Yeah. I will need to do this. Yes.
So, Simone, thank you.
No, thank you. This is great.
This was so good. I appreciate you and your words and everything that you're working on right now. And I don't know, man. Onward.
Only way to go.
Yeah.
It's only up from here.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Am I Allowed to Like Anything? I'm Darian Harvin. This episode was produced by Jason Crow. And if you love the show, don't forget to rate and subscribe on iTunes.